Unquiet spirits have gathered once again. All the Haunts Be Ours, Volume 2, brings together 24 films representing 18 countries for more of the best-loved, rarely-seen, thought-lost, and brand-new classics of folk horror, most making their international and or North American disc debuts, including the worldwide disc premiere of the Severn Films documentary Susanna, the Queen of Black Magic, directed by David Gregory. You also get 55-plus combined hours of new and archival special features, a 252-page hardcover of newly commissioned folk horror fiction by luminaries that include Ramsey Campbell, Cassandra Kaw, and Eden Royce, with illustrations by Drazen Kozjan, and much, much more. All curated and produced by Woodlands Dark and Days Bewitched creator Kayla Janice. This fall, folk horror comes home. For more info, visit SevernFilms.com.
And welcome to Colors of the Dark. I'm your co-host, Rebecca McKendry, and with me, the messy Elric Kane, who needs to make his bed, straighten his books, and straighten his posters.
Hello, love. How you doing?
How are you doing? Welcome back from the UK.
I was in London, where I watched all those Jack the Ripper films and got to actually go walk the Jack the Ripper walk. That was pretty exciting.
So not everybody heard our Patreon show. Wow. So leading up to Elric's trip to the UK, he covered like 13 Jack the Ripper films.
14 different Jack the Ripper things, because some were like TV shows, but mostly, it was at least 12 movies, discovered a couple good ones.
And this was over on our Patreon show. So definitely go check out Deep Cuts and find that Jack the Ripper episode, because there were some freaking gems in there. Okay, so you actually got to go to Whitechapel.
Yeah, Whitechapel was really cool. We just did a self-walk because we'd missed the timing for all the proper ones. But it is still pretty eerie in parts. I've got to say, there's one street that's still pretty well preserved, like they've gone out of their way to preserve it. And I took a photo of this building as a car was backing up, so it cast the red light on the building. So everyone probably who saw my photo probably thinks it's like, oh, it's just something they do with a red light. No, it looked genuinely creepy. That was really fun. We found a cat that we think did it, so we're calling him Cat the Ripper because he was hanging out on all the spots where the murders.
The cat did it.
Well, we assume
he was alive hundreds of years ago.
No, reincarnated. If you watch Hands of the Ripper, you'll understand
it. Copy. The Ripper has been relocated to Arizona, I thought.
Everywhere.
Now.
It's so, many, many opportunities have.
Yeah. So much conspiracy theory and amazing films that you covered. So.
But besides that, yes. Fright Fest, beautiful festival. Paul McAvoy, Alan Jones, incredible legends and hosts. It was it was weird because our film was the last day. So we had like 5 days of just watching tons of movies every day and like festivaling before we were even kind of working.
Did you do the touristy stuff where you go to the squares and see the castle?
Not as much. We did a couple days where we just did a couple breaks, like going to the Thames, walking the Thames and things like that. I went to go to the BFI, the British Film Institute, which was neat. Mm-hmm. But not all of the stuff, because I know at some point I'll be back. I mean, once you're at this fest, because it's all in Leicester Square, so it's a very, very busy, very touristy area, you kind of get consumed into that area because it's hard to leave because all the events are there. But definitely a few things. Did shopping on Notting Hill, which is where all these antique stores are in a row. And so that was pretty cool. We kind of did a little antique walk. But now most of this was a commitment to cinema and a couple that I will only highlight a few films when we get into the films, because I want to kind of mostly talk about ones that are kind of coming out soon so people can actually catch them. I will say Evrim Ersoy, who is a programmer, the programmer of Beyond Fest and multiple European festivals, he does something there called the Duke Mitchell Film Club. And I'd always heard about it and was really curious what it was. And it's basically they take the craziest clips and they have a, sold out theater. And all the filmmakers get to pick one clip of something crazy they want to introduce themselves with. So it's like, it was my favorite thing that we did there, because it was, I got to pick some crazy Wingshauser serial killer LA movie that no one's ever heard of. And
I was going to say, what movie is this that defines you?
It doesn't have to be defined. Like, it could just be saying wild, you know what I mean? Like, so I had Possessed 2 on hold. That would have been my second. But my first was called The Art of Dying. It's basically gone from the world. And Wingshauser directed it. It is a serial killer in Los Angeles who is doing things like restaging movies like Deer Hunter and then murdering the people in it. And Wings is a cop trying to find him. But he also directed it, and it went straight to video. And I've been trying every year. I want to play it at the American Cinematheque for one of their podcast things, but so far no one has found a print of this thing. It's pretty wild. So look up the trailer if you want some entertainment. But they did also invite me for a second one, so I came back up and did Possessed 2, and that just goes over like a bonkers movie it is. But it's super fun. Just a great way to, I think that's something all festivals should do. It's like, what a great way to introduce yourself and meet other, you know, people than showing something crazy. So Duke Mitchell Film Club, next time you're out at the Fright Fest, do it.
Fantastic. Okay, so you want to kick us off with a couple of your festival watches.
Firstly, I'm going to tell people, so I saw 14 films, so I'm only going to cover five, but the one I want to just, I won't even count as a pick, but The Hitcher in 4K, they screened it. This was the world premiere, and it's just, I mean, that movie's already like one of the best bangers ever made. This was just like upping another notch.
This is the original Hitcher.
Yeah, the original Hitcher. Okay. 4K like, release. Yeah. They put it in their big cinema, because the cinema where my film played too is like 800 or 7 something, and it's I'll probably never play in a nicer cinema, and the sound's so good. So watching The Hitcher like this, it was so exciting, and remains one of my absolute favorite movies of all time. Like, it is such an exciting movie to sit down and watch. So look out for that. Well, I'll start with the big one, one of the big ones of the festival, because it's also happening here right now, and I can say very, very little about it, and that is Strange Darling.
This has been getting a lot of press, a lot of people saying this is going to be the number one film of the year.
It's absolutely in the conversation. It's definitely like top three for me right now. It's exciting when the two leads, so it's Willa Fitzgerald, who was best known to us from the Scream TV show. She was the lead on that, and we're obviously friends with John Carno, who was on that show. So
isn't he in your movie?
He is. So I had it.
Yeah.
And I believe we actually went out to her at one point, and she was gone off to do Reacher. So anyway, it's always interesting to who ends up in movies. And then Cal Gallner, who we knew because he ended up living out near me.
He was like your neighbor. I met him at one of your kids' birthday parties.
And he's the coolest. I mean, you talk about celebrities who are cooler than even their online persona. Like, this guy is the nicest, you know, writes to me all the time, congratulating about the film, like just a cool dude.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people are celebrating him right now because he's had a few in a row. But what?
Smile. He was in the new Scream.
He was
is
in
that
the new
right?
Scream. There was something. He was in.
And Passengers.
Passengers, which is a really edgy, and Mother May I, like literally a few in a row that I've liked all of them. But what I want people to take away from what his success is, look at those movies. And besides Scream, they're all risky. They are not safe movies. This is an actor who is picking things like Dinner in America that could be controversial, could cause problems, might not be successful because they're indie. Like, there's so many reasons for him not to pick them at this stage in his career, because he's clearly at a stage where he could get kicked up. And he's doing them, and he's killing it. So I think Strange Darling might be the apex of that, because when the two of these actors are on screen together, it's the best film of the year. There's a couple scenes that maybe aren't quite as strong when they're not both together. It is really surprising. I could say very little. Basically, I'll say what's in the log line. It's about a one night stand that you're watching unfold. So you don't know. It keeps changing the chapter of what you're about to watch. And so one of the tricks, it's playing out of order. It's very, very much in a throwback to the 90s and even what Pulp Fiction and things were doing about how they delivered the story. But what you do know is that there has been, like, all you've heard is there's been a vicious serial killer out there. And then it cuts to this date, and that's what you're kind of just locked in with, these two people getting to know each other and kind of pushing the pain pleasure thing between them. So it's pretty edgy in terms of what, but they're communicating all the way through it. And there's other characters. Barbara Hershey and Egg Begley Jr. Play a role later in the film. It's really fun, and I really can't say much more. I mean, this director JT Molnar shot it on film. Giovanni Ribisi, the very well-known actor, as the cinematographer of this movie, which came out of left field. Like, if you watch Sofia Coppola's what's her big movie with set in Japan? I always forget the name of this damn movie with
Lost in Translation.
If you watch Lost in Translation, Giovanni Ribisi plays her boyfriend, who a lot of people think it was based on Spike Jonze. And he's a camera guy in that, like, he's all into the lenses and stuff. So I wonder what it is, but apparently he's wanted to basically not give up acting, but like be a DP. So he's shooting on film, and the film is definitely one of the best looking movies of the year. It's pretty stunning. But you really can't say much more, because it kind of does a disservice to the experience, because it's really fun not knowing much about it. But it is, it's actually exciting. I haven't had that many times this year where I'm sitting watching the first few minutes of a movie and I'm like, oh, this is, I don't know what's going to happen now. And that to me is, you can't say better than that. And so absolutely see it in a theater if you still can. I think it's probably out for a couple more weeks in theaters. That's Strange Darling.
Strange Darling. It's already starting to, they're already starting to shave times, because even when I checked this weekend for us to see it again, it was already down to like, these are the two showings. And so if you're going to see it in a theater, I'd really recommend seeing it now. I don't think we're going to see it in theaters within a week or so.
And if you're in the LA, the Vista's been playing it on film, which is super cool. Mm-hmm. So, but yes, Strange Darling was a hit. And, you know, I had seen quite a few small movies leading up to it. And you could feel, you know, in the theater and in the space, you could feel people are really excited. So that was an exciting one. So I'll just start with that one, because it's out everywhere.
Excellent. Okay, I'll kick off by saying I watched Oddity, which Elric had talked about on the show previously. This is another one that I think is contending for one of the best horror films of the year. Yeah. This is Irish or Scottish?
I think it just says UK.
UK.
I'm not sure which he is.
Yeah.
He made Caveat before this.
Yes. Yeah. But this, the reason that I knew this director, he had made some really, really tight short films, like really good, just 1, 2, 3 jump scare type short films that were all under 5 minutes. And I'd used a couple in a few of my horror classes when I was giving examples of like, you know, you don't have to have 10 minutes to make a jump scare. You can make it in 4 minutes as long as you set it up well. And so I knew him from that, but this is amazing. Honestly, the cold open on this was just worth the price. Like, this was
great. I agree. It's actually scary the first 10 minutes. You're actually like on the edge of your seat.
This is going to Shudder eventually. It's a Shudder original. Right now, because it is just coming off of its theatrical, it's a paid rental. I think it was like $6 on Amazon. Honestly, it was worth it. I mean, definitely stick around and, you know, wait for the Shudder subscription to kick in and for it to go to Shudder. But right now it is a paid, and it was just super tight. I won't go too deep into that one since Elric had talked about it already, but I will talk about, let's go to New Life. Okay.
Oh, before you go on, I will say, sorry, I just looked up. It is Irish.
Oh, go ahead.
It is Irish.
Okay.
So you're right, because they've been killing it the last 5 years. It's unreal.
That tax incentive, or I think they have a lottery.
No, a lot of countries do. Like all of UK have different lotteries and just ways.
Tax incentives and Canada. Yeah, we just really need some of those in the US. Yeah. So some of us can, you know, get in on that. But that said, totally. Yeah, we've been seeing a lot of bangers come out of Ireland for that reason. Okay, so this one hails from Portland, which I had been hearing about this from some of the people that I had met at Lovecraft Fest last year, that there was this kind of Portland helm shot film that was kind of in the works. And I'd been seeing it pop up on a couple people's feeds. And so I was really excited to check this out. The poster for it was really alluring, where it's just a woman in a helmet, like a space helmet with blood splattered across it. And it's called New Life. And I was like, okay. And even the log line is super vague about a mysterious woman on the run and a woman who is chasing her. And then their stories begin to link. And that tells me nothing. And what you enter into is a woman who is running, and she is trying to get to the Canadian border. And she is basically going from like safe house to safe house. And she is running from some type of federal agency. You don't really know what it is yet, but this federal agency is chasing her. And every single person that she comes in contact with, they immediately have to come in contact with and quarantine them. And it's, you know, like really intense, like government scrutiny. And she is just running from like small farm to camping out with this person in an apartment. And you don't really know why the feds are chasing her. She is just trying to get to Canada. And then you start to realize that all of the people that she is coming in contact with are suddenly developing this explosively disgusting bloody disease. And that's where I'll leave it. Like, I definitely don't want to go too far, because it does get a lot more in depth, but that very much as kind of you can see in the trailer, that there is something that is happening to every single person that she meets. And that's why she's being chased. And we spend just as much time with her and her backstory and kind of what she's running from and what she thinks she's running to, as you do with this woman who is with the federal agency. And she's basically kind of like, I think that the bio describes her as a fixer. Like, you can tell she's government based, but at the same time, her job is to basically make sure that no one really knows what's happening, to go in and make sure that every single person that she's come in contact with doesn't realize kind of the bigger picture of what's going on. This, I will say, is loosely horror. I'd call it more science fiction, but it has some really grotesque moments. So it definitely enters into the horror there. For a small kind of homespun indie production, this is cool. I had fun with this. It was not, you know, a moment of gore every minute. It was not jump scares. It was not crazy. But for a tense little science fiction horror that was done on what I suspect was a very tight budget, this was cool.
What's the title?
New Life. This New Life. New Life. Huh. This is, I rented it off Amazon for like $6. But yeah, this was it definitely, I don't know if it'd make my top 10 for the year, but I was very appreciative of what it was doing and where it went.
Cool.
And that it was taking some big swings with a very small cast and limited locations.
Okay, I'll rock through two at a time here because these ones are ones I can't go into deep. What's more, the only thing more ridiculous than a YouTuber who decides to make movies is a podcaster who decides to make movies, so I can speak.
Hey, what are you saying?
So Chris Stuckman got huge attention for Shelby Oaks, probably the most anticipated thing, and probably I feel like the thing I can really talk the least about because it's so much anticipation. Neon bought it recently. There was a big story. This was crowdfunded. Over $1 million of crowdfunding, a big deal. A lot of people we know were involved. I thought there was a lot of anticipation at this one because it might not play again now that Neon's bought it. I kind of heard that this might have been the last time it's going to be screened because there might be some reshooting and it might.
And was this a Paper Street production?
This
too?
Was, yeah. This was Aaron Koontz. And okay. So I was going in and I heard it was found footage and I was going into this going, I just didn't know what to expect. What I'll say is I very much enjoyed it. I think that this is a very fun horror film, and I think it's very successful in the sense of entertainment, and I feel like it has the potential to be kind of like next year's Smile in that category. Again, I can't really even say very much at all, except what's in the log line that's on IMDb, but what you learn about this group of people who had a popular YouTube show at the start, and it's found footage, and you're learning about their show, and it's kind of fun, and you learn that basically all of them were killed. And you find out that they didn't survive. So, but people didn't, one of the bodies was never found, this girl. So it's about the sister of the girl who has been missing all this time. And so you're learning all about this YouTube show and how they kind of would chase hauntings and things like that. So it has a very pretty generic setup that could be a movie that I'd find obnoxious, to be perfectly honest. And then it switches gear a few minutes in and becomes like a very interesting movie. And I found myself very pulled into it. Still about because the thing you learn very much at the start, and this is also in the IMDb, so I'm not spoiling it. I promise I won't spoil this one. The younger sister, when she was young, believed there was an imaginary demon who would come to her window. And the older sister was always like, well, it's just in your imagination. She would draw pictures. And now she's not so sure that it was imaginary. And then she starts investigating. It is really fun. Like I just kept kind of surprising me. And even when it kind of goes to some familiar places, it's always doing it well. And so hats off to YouTuber turned filmmaker, Chris Stuckman. Well done, sir. I want to get him on the show one time because I really do think that's a fun conversation. You know, YouTubers and me and you are both podcasters doing it. Mm-hmm. It's a different angle to be doing this stuff at. And I know he got a bit of flack because I don't really consider us critics because we're not really reviewing in depth. He's a critic and has been for years doing, you know, talking. And so now it's kind of tough because you're also making a movie and putting it out there. So, but yes, do look out for Shelby Oaks. I know it's probably going to get I'm going to guess quite a big release by the time it rolls around to next year. So I didn't want to say too much more on that one. And the other one that definitely put this might be, I don't know if this is the best of the fest, but it's way up there and it's going to be.
I figured Strange Darling would be. Okay.
It is. Well, Strange Darling too. And the last one I'll mention is an obvious one, but this was the one that we knew nothing about. And I have since seen, I think it's been picked for Toronto Midnights coming up. So this is called Dead Male. I wouldn't call it a horror film. Has two directors. And it is basically a guy is trying to, at the opening scene, is trying to post a letter and somebody's trying to grab him and like drag him into the house. So kind of horror beginning, but then it becomes quite different. It's set in the 80s and it opens it to a post office where dead letters go to, where they can't figure out who the letter was from or who it's to. And they're trying to figure out, these like women in the 80s are trying to figure it out. And there's some guy there who's like a genius who can like literally piece together things. So they take it down to him and he starts piecing it together. And it opens up this total mystery. And I think it's a true crime thing or it's like Fargo. But what I would say is this, and it has a whole subplot about synthesizers and people who are obsessed by making synth music. And it is and I've just recently watched all the seasons of Fargo, the show. It is like an entire season of that in 90 minutes. And
And
it is as good. It is very strong, like as a drama. It's a little flat in a good way. So I think some people who went to this one thinking, oh, horror, some people might have been like, oh, it's not quite what they expected. But it is absolutely a standout. And look out for it. It's just called Dead Male. At the end, it makes it seem like it was a true story, and you showed photos of the real people, and I made me like it even more.
Wow.
But I'm not 100% sure that's true. It could have been bullshit. But anyway, look out for that one. It's just called Dead Male.
Let's see. I will quickly mention Hostile Dimensions.
Curious about that.
Yeah, it just came available for purchase on Amazon or for rental on Amazon. This I had been interested in because it played Beyond Fest last year. And it is definitely, it's found footage. It is very budgeted. You know, some of the production value, some of the acting, things like that are definitely not, you know, amazing. But that said, there was something really innovative about what they were doing with it. It's about a graffiti artist who is looking at these abandoned buildings, and she goes into this abandoned buildings with a guy, and they're filming their whole adventure. And they find this door, literally just this door with a frame standing upright in the middle of the room. And she walks through it and completely disappears. And it is now a couple of months later, and these documentarians are trying to figure out what happened to her. And they're able to find that door. And then they open it and realize that it's got different dimensions, that it's a doorway to different alternate realities. There's something very homespun about it. And you can tell that it was very much, you know, kind of a DIY indie production. At the same time, they're doing some big stuff with it. So it was short. So that it was like maybe an hour and 10 minutes. So
That's how not long giant, it should be when you're dealing with found footage, low budget stuff, in my opinion.
Low budget. I was like, I will totally watch an hour and 10 minutes. And this, much like I mentioned with New Life, you could tell that this was very much like an indie, like regional production, with not necessarily big actors, but at the same time, they had big ideas. And I really appreciated that. So I at least wanted to mention it. That one, it's UK. That's definitely
I'm keen to see that one, actually. I saw the poster. It looked cool. A couple, again, super brief, these ones, because they're both coming out soon. Friend of the show, E.L. Katz, written by Simon Barrett. His movie,
oh, you saw it,
Azrael. And unfortunately, I saw this one in the small. Some of them I liked watching in the small. There's a small theater for like the critics and the guests, so you don't miss anything if the main theaters. But this would have been really like a big. I think it would have made a lot more sense on big screen. But this is Samara Weaving. I knew nothing about this, but what's interesting is Samara Weaving.
This is shot in Bulgaria.
No, this is Estonia. But the reason why it's relevant to me and you is he used all the same people from November. DP from November. He got the crew from November because it's Estonia. So that
because it's the only other Estonian horror film that exists.
Yeah, it's definitely got a folk horror feel, but it's basically like a almost Mad Max Fury Road type. It's basically a long chase. Samara Weaving is part of a group. I knew nothing going in, and also I'll say very little, but basically no one speaks. The gimmick of the movie is that she's silent and all these people have had something happen to their throat, so there's no real dialogue particularly in this movie, even though there's, you know, some tricks to that. And she is being persecuted at some point. I didn't even really want to say what's happening because it took me a while to figure out, because you're kind of just lost in it with her. So it's gonna, like, some people will probably be frustrated because it's not a traditional movie, right? It's a very different type of movie, in the same way that Fury Road's a different type of movie. But people looking for something that's just like wall-to-wall moving banger kind of moment, I think, are gonna have a blast. So that she is basically being chased by these people who are trying to sacrifice her to something in the woods, something creepy. There was moments that reminded me, like, a Descent vibe to that stuff. So definitely, but I know that one is coming to Shudder pretty soon, I think. So look out for that. And then another person who I really liked, who I met, Michael Felker, who's been the editor for Moorhead and Benson on all their films.
Yep.
And Dave Lawson, I'm sure, produced this. This is Things Will Be Different. And I think you'll really like this one. It is two siblings are reuniting after a robbery that they've committed, and you learn through them that they figured out this. There's a house with a closet that has some sort of time shift, and you can basically bounce either forward or back in time a couple weeks, so that way you won't be caught by cops. But it opens up a kind of time loop issue that they then have to deal with, and it's very much a two people stuck in a house with a big idea that's gonna either kill them or that they have to survive. And it's
That sounds
real
so
smart.
Rustic
it's
picture.
So rustic. It's so like that. It's really smart. It's Riley Dandy, who was the actress from Joe Bicus's last one, the Christmas one, and an actor who I was really impressed by, Adam David Thompson, who I wasn't familiar with. He was really good. It's a very even, very well calculated, smart time bounce movie. So not sure where that one's going, but I think it's finishing its festival run. So and I met the director, who's just super cool guy. Had a great convo and really enjoyed that one. So look out for those. And I'll end with, because I can't, no point saying anything about it in terms of my Fright Fest ended with the bangerest of the bangerest, and everyone in the world's about to feel the same. The Substance brought the fucking house down.
I heard
when it was at Cannes, and I still thought, okay, sure.
And I've heard that it's like 90 minutes of just okay, and then the last 10.
No. So it's
blow up.
Well, it's 2.5 hours. So
Jesus Christ!
And if
I better be on Mubi, I'm going to do that in my pajamas.
No, well, it's definitely a big screen movie. Revenge is one of the best debuts in the last like decade. I think it's just such a fully formed directed movie. But this movie, even if it didn't have the last 20 minutes, it's real smart. Like in the rest of it, it's more like a really cool science fiction, almost like a really great Black Mirror episode. Then the last 20 minutes is the craziest thing since Society. And I would not be somebody who would say that if I did not mean, I have not seen a movie since Society that goes this crazy. And it is so fucking fun when it's somebody like this, who's making a big kind of serious baller movie, and then they go full wild practical insanity, and people couldn't even believe it. I saw my friends like Webb and Star, who had been kind of straight faced the entire festival, both losing their shit, laughing out loud. It was really something, and it's going to be exciting for people to see Demi Moore go all the fuck in. Like, she is so all in on this movie, it's not even funny. Dennis Quaid's playing a guy called Harvey in the film industry, and is very over the top. And then Margaret Qualley's playing, it's basically a celebrity who's kind of losing their edge and is getting older, has to go to this black market drug, and it does something that creates something that she has to then wrestle with for the rest of the movie. I won't even say more than that in case no one wants to know. It is so much fun. I can't wait to see it again. I will go with you on the opening night, because I know you're going to be just like cackling in your seat.
It's
so crazy. So look out for that. It lives up to the hype. And again, she's one of the most interesting filmmakers, because I wouldn't think, even watching the first 2/3 of this, I'm like, you could just end there and everyone's going to take you as like this very serious, great filmmaker. Instead, she like goes all the way to this other spectrum and shows that she's just welcome to the bonkers crowd.
Yeah,
it's great.
Okay, couple of other ones that I have watched. These are all available for us normies who didn't get to go to Fright Fest now. So this one I was shocked to find lurking in my new releases, and this is Dr. Jekyll. This is the one from Hammer, starring Eddie Izzard as is Susan Jekyll, I think her name is in the movie. And so Eddie Izzard is playing Susan Jekyll and her counterpart, Rachel Hyde. And I had been totally in on this, not just because I love Eddie Izzard, but I also, Hammer has had such kind of a wild ride over the last decade and a half, where they fell asleep, like, after, you know, obviously giant Hammer boom in the 70s, and then we did in 60s and 70s. And then they kind of like did this massive reemergence in the late 2000s with Wakewood, which was great. Yeah, it was super small, but it was like super small folk horror, and it was great. And then they followed that up with, why can't I remember?
Woman in Black?
Woman in Black. Thank
Which
you.
Is a big studio
banger
kind of
of a
thing.
movie, massive studio thing, banger of a film, exploded. That thing was huge when it came out. I remember that being one
That's
of the
a big
biggest
deal.
Films
yeah,
of the year. And then a couple of years passed, like 5-6 years passed. And then they do like a couple of indies, another 5 years passes. They do another indie. 2019, they did The Lodge. I think that was, when was that?
Wait,
that
was Hammer did The Lodge? They,
Yeah, I can't even remember the year on that, but it's been a couple of years.
Yeah,
Actually,
maybe
that may
then
have
5 years even.
Maybe five
Yeah.
years, yeah. So they did The Lodge. And so, yeah, but they keep having these kind of five-year pauses in between each film. And a lot of times it's because they're undergoing new ownership. So they just kind of went under new ownership, some company shifts and things like that over the last 5 years. So this is their first big new one back out of the gate with new branding. And you read on their website and it's all about, you know, looking forward to the future. And this is what they kicked off with. And so I was really excited about this because you had me at Eddie Izzard. I love that they're kind of returning to classic horror. That whole idea of what made Hammer great was taking these really antiquated horror stories, these gothic tales, but doing them with really strong updates. This movie, I would have loved. Eddie Izzard was great in it. That was kind of my big takeaway, was he was doing amazing stuff in both roles and how fluidly they were moving back and forth between the Jekyll and Hyde characters. The setup is that a young man who is an ex-con who has just gotten out of prison is sent on this job interview to be basically like a live-in nurse to Susan Hyde, who is this pharmaceutical mogul who comes from this massive lineage, a giant, massive, like big pharma company. She runs it. It was hugely controversial because she was trans. It was in the papers. She is now holed up in this massive Victorian mansion, recovering from some type of condition. We're not really sure what at this point. And her assistant has hired this young man to be her live-in nurse and make sure, or aide. He's not a nurse. He's just kind of an assistant, getting her medicine, making sure her meals are prepared on time, helping with anything that she needs. And he discovers that during the day that the person that he is working for, Susan Hyde, is quite lovely, is charming, or sorry, Susan Jekyll is very lovely, charming, easy to work with. But at night, something happens and it turns hyper-violent, it gets wild. And we all know where Jekyll and Hyde goes. This is not a spoilery type thing. Where this film lost me is it just did not have a lot of scares. Like, it was a relatively just boring movie about two people walking around a house going, oh, I didn't realize you were in there. And then having an awkward moment while we try to figure out if it's Jekyll or Hyde. And then he walks off. And then there were some moments of tension and a couple moments of violence, but none of it was enough to really, really like go full engagement. And I was hoping that I wasn't the only one, because honestly, I tend to be the type of person who's like, by the second act, I'm like, something needs to explode or a head needs to get lobbed off or I'm checking out. And so I wanted to make sure this just wasn't me saying I'm not as much into slow burn horror. And no, this is the general kind of consensus, was that this was just really light on the scares, really light on kind of the horror moments. And then when it does explode, I won't say what happens. Well, we all know what happens. We've all know the story of Jekyll and Hyde. It's really CG'd. And that, you know, coming from Hammer's sharp, sharp lineage of having just these incredibly gory, rich, bloody moments, to go to something that was so CG'd, I don't know. I wanted this to be better. It had moments that I was super in on. There were several of the Eddie Izzard performance moments that I was like, oh, this is great. And there was definitely some really great production design and costuming choices. But honestly, if I'm paying really close attention to the production design, good on the production designer, but that means that not a lot's happening. So yeah, Dr. Jekyll. Watch it for Eddie Izzard, but yeah, it's definitely a real slow burn one. I wish Hammer had come out of the gates. This could have been fucking wild. I know we were talking about Dr. Jekyll's stories on the Patreon show where we did the Jack the Ripper episode. And like Edge of Sanity, which is an Anthony Perkins movie. That movie is fucking wild. Like, it is unhinged. That's how I want to see Jekyll and Hyde done now, where it feels contemporary because of how unhinged it gets mentally. This is a little bit more subdued.
Dr. Jekyll and Sister Hyde is also real good. Like, really.
Oh, you talked about that one.
Like,
yeah.
That's one that Edgar Wright recommended us on the show. And I remember being like, and just thinking it would be kind of dumb. It's really, really a great movie. And it sounds like kind of where they might have wanted this to land. But I saw a couple things since getting back, and I'll do them real brief. Brand new movies, but one of them I'm very excited to put on people's radar. One is called Out Come the Wolves. And the reason why this will mean saying to you, you like your animal attack movies. This is at.
I do love my animal attack.
I know
movies.
You definitely do. This is Adam McDonald, and he knows a thing or two about animal attacks because he made Backcountry with the bear.
Oh, I loved that one.
The bear attack in that movie. So I saw this one with our friend Dick. This one stars Missy Peregrine from Stick It.
And I love her.
She's really good. The two guys I didn't like so much, but it's like a triangle. Basically, it's her old friend in the wilderness, who's like a hunter, has come to basically teach her boyfriend / fiance guy, who's this very not wilderness guy. He's writing an article about hunting because he's never killed anything. And there's obviously a love thing, like, you know, in the past that he's getting jealous about. So there's some pretty obvious tension going on between them. But and that takes just a little too long to set up. Like, it probably goes on for like 30 minutes before they're out in the wilderness. Once they go into the wilderness, here's the thing about this movie. There's wolf attacks, and they reuse all real wolves in this movie. So this is not a CG movie. This is a movie that used real wolves in their movie. So that's the reason to watch it. Is this movie perfect? No, but once the animal attack stuff's happening, it's pretty exciting and is really kind of working. So I would recommend checking this out if you're an animal attacks person. And Missy Peregrine, you know, kind of brings the movie back to life. But I dig her. And then the one I'm really excited to bring up here, and I just totally randomly watched it the night before we recorded. I had just seen a couple people post about a found footage movie that had been uploaded straight to YouTube. So it was not going any traditional routes. And it's called Milk and Cereal, directed by Curry Barker, who
pop up on your feed last night.
It popped up because I watched up, and then it popped up the day before because I guess there was an article about it. So these guys have been doing popular prank shows and popular, you know, been a popular web duo. And that's what the movie's about too. And they made this film, a horror film, and then they just uploaded it straight to YouTube instead of, I think they explored traditional routes, but then they were like, yeah, this only cost us like $1,000. And it is one of the more exciting things I've seen lately. Like, I think it helps knowing that you didn't pay for it. Like, I think if me and you had gone to this in a theater, I probably would have had a very different reaction, but I still would have been interested. It's only about 63 minutes. I would recommend watching it tonight. Like, it will grab you. I guarantee, especially you. It is like, it opens
Milk and Cereal.
Milk and Cereal, as in cereal with an S. And it basically is a popular prank guy. He's basically a duo, and he's putting on a birthday for his friend, and he's basically behind the scenes planning a crazy, crazy prank that's going to happen at the birthday, where they're getting a gun with blanks and they're getting squibs, and that's going to be the start. And that's all you know about what's going to happen in this movie. I knew nothing, but that's all you need to know. And then it goes in very, very different directions by the end of this movie. And it is really captivating. I think one of the best found footage things I've seen in the last few years.
Wow.
And I also think it's exciting because it shows that there's a different way, because already it's only been on there for a few days, and already it's way past 500,000, probably up to 1 million by now. Articles are being written. They've already got a deal at a studio, like, for a movie. So it's like, we all do it a traditional route, and maybe you make your money back, and then you try to do this, and you try. It's like, there are other patterns. And now, other movies don't necessarily suit this way. Like, this suits the platform of YouTube because it's found footage, because they're YouTubers. But it is exciting to see that there are other models, because the system is totally fucking broken. Like, everyone knows it.
It used to be, this is just general stuff, where, like, it used to be, because we've been doing this for so long, where I would see the industry as an ecosystem. Like, we were all making our own little thing, but we were feeding this ecosystem. Yeah. I now see it as like 30 different people all working for these little independent little ecosystems, but there is no unity anymore.
It's a total wild west.
It's a weird time. It's a weird time right now.
It is a confused model that doesn't know what it is, and probably going to take like years to catch up. But like, it just shows if you're out there, you didn't need an agent, you didn't need a manager, you didn't need a, I mean, they obviously had a following. So maybe that's the only reason I heard about it, because maybe enough press. But even so, so this Milk and Cereal, I won't say anymore, but I honestly think, I think you will definitely start, if you start watching it, you will finish it tonight. Yeah, like,
see, I watch stuff on YouTube, like I watch, because my kids turned me on to all of these different horror platforms on YouTube. Like, I'm super into Life of Luxury now. Like, there's a bunch that I'm like, if they're making short form horror content, especially in the found footage realm, I enjoy it. But you just went off on a tangent right before we started rolling on this show about how you are not a YouTube person.
I'm just not a YouTuber. I said I'm not a YouTuber.
To the thousand people who are watching us on YouTube right now, or a couple hundred, however, whoever's with us on YouTube, thank you. Thank you, even though Elric is not a YouTuber.
I use YouTube every day, probably. I listen to music through it. I do all sorts of stuff. I look for trailers, all the time, all that kind of stuff.
It is literally the backdrop of my work, because I will throw like old TV episodes on. I will throw music on. And the majority of the time, it's coming out of YouTube. So
my dream is to be behind a camera, behind a microphone, not in front. That is always, as soon as I'm in front, I'm like, oh my god, what am I doing? So anyway, that's okay. I don't mind being on this, because it's, I don't know I'm on this, because I'm not looking.
That's okay, because Zoom makes it feel completely anonymous, because we're all wearing sweatpants. Okay, let me do a couple of final titles to round us out here. We Are Zombies. So this one is currently on Screambox, and I'd had a couple people DM me and message me on socials and say, like, you probably want to check this out, it feels like your jam. And I will say, this does feel like my jam. It was a little bit too over the top, silly, and sophomoric for me to be like madly in love with it, but it was still really fun. I liked the idea that they were setting up this kind of fictionalized world and then just going with it. Because in this fictionalized world that We Are Zombies is setting up, there is zombies already exist. Like, they are part of society and they've been given menial jobs. They're not, and there's groups, there's moral groups who are fighting to have them not labeled as like zombies. They're living challenged. And they're given, seem to have no recollection of their prior lives, but they just don't die. Like, grandpa picks it in the chair and he still just is kind of there, but he's reborn as something else. He will decay, but he has no memory of kind of his prior life for most of them. So then if when the people die or the zombies are still able-bodied, they are given menial jobs. Like, they become cooks, or, you know, there's actually like a whole sex trade industry for prostitutes in varying states of decay. So they kind of function in smaller jobs that nobody else wants to do. And the ones that, those are the high functioning zombies, the ones that can't, kind of walk the streets begging like homeless people. So you can tell already this has a big social statement behind it. But this is a comedy, so we're not going to focus a lot on that social statement, which I felt was like was a shame, because I was immediately like, you're making a really interesting statement about how we treat menial workers in this society and the homeless, because everybody is just like fucking zombies. Like, they're all just really irritated, except for these like very small moralistic groups that are fighting for them to, you know, have rights and things like that. So it felt like a great social movie, but we're not going to focus on that. It's a comedy. What instead we focus on are these two hapless guys who are basically con artists. They live with their grandma and they are very, very sweet to their grandma. And she thinks they're absolute angels, but they basically con people. There's a company whose job it is to go in and remove zombies from your home. If grandpa is, you know, he died, he still seems to be kind of there, but he's starting to smell, you can have a company come in and remove him, and you will pay them thousands of dollars to remove grandpa. Because remember, it's not grandpa as much anymore. And so their thing that they do is they try to get in before that company comes in, get paid for it, and then sell that body. So they are pretending to be these people and they're conning people. Well, through this, they end up on the wrong side of a gangster, of kind of a mafia mob guy, and their grandma gets kidnapped and they have to try to save grandma. And that is our premise of the movie. And then it involves a lot of zombies. So we end up with this crime movie, but in this world of zombies being around you all the time. And then it is this over the top comedy, very kind of sophomoric at times, at other times it's just really sharp. French Canadian, this was fun. The gore was fun. It was fun across the board. But definitely go in knowing that it is not going to take itself seriously at any point. Like, even when I was like, oh, good social statement, you know, it quickly would steer away from it and go someplace gross, which, you know, it knew what it was. So yeah, this was We Are Zombies, currently on Screambox. I will quickly mention, even though it's not 100% horror, it's close enough that I'm seeing a lot of our friends who are mostly into horror, it's popping up on their letterboxes. This is the new show, South Korean, I believe, show on Netflix called The Frog. And it is such a creepy setup that within the first two episodes, I was like, it felt like a horror film. It tracked like a horror film. It is about two guys who are running this really rural Airbnb, or I guess it's more like a hotel, like a bed and breakfast. And they, you know, have a smattering of clients who pop in and out. It's not very popular. One night, this really weird woman checks in with her son, and she's really bizarre and just doing bizarre stuff around. And the son seems totally normal. He's just playing with a little stuffed dog. And then it starts getting really weird, and something happens with the woman. And this is all in the first episode. And then after this weird woman leaves, it just keeps getting creepier and creepier. And I can't say anything else because there's actually a lot of really nice twists in this, but it gets super weird. This was fun. I'm on episode 4 now, and my students are going ape over this as well. So The Frog on Netflix, definitely a super fun, creepy show. It's definitely presented in kind of a Fargo-esque style, or Coen Brothers, where it is very much a darkly comedic, quirky thing, but with these really dark themes. And you never, I mean, I'm on episode 4 and I still have no idea what the fuck is happening. And then quickly, I will say, I'll just use this as a plea because I read it yesterday. I just read Laurel Hightower's Below novella. This is a couple of years old, but I was so excited to read this because I need more Mothman in my life. Why can't I have more Mothman? And this was kind of obscure Mothman. Like, we weren't even too sure if it was Mothman related. But judging by the front cover, you can totally say, okay, that's Mothman. I even wore my Mothman earrings tonight. Nice. But yeah, so Laurel Hightower, I at least wanted to mention this because this was a really, really tight novella. I've been reading a lot of adolescent horror as well for an upcoming project that shall not be discussed at this time. So yeah, Nancy Spector, I've been checking out, and Halloween and Shock City and a bunch of others. But yeah, that catches me up with everything.
Nice. I fell back into another novel.
What did you read on the plane?
I started reading, Nick Cave wrote a book about like grief and forgiveness and all these kind of like kind of a philosophical kind of he's changed. I mean, he's like his music.
Nick Cave sings lot about the devil, right, and his penis,
but like his son died and like fell to his death a few years ago, and he
did not know
and he you know, he kept doing his thing, but he was dealing with a lot of that during COVID. And just trying to, like, it's really interesting. I have to go back to it, like, because I read the first couple chapters on a plane, and sometimes I can fall out of a plane book, especially one that's not fiction, right? And so this is like a series of interviews just about how he kind of sees the world and all this kind of stuff. So that was really cool. And then I just started reading one called Black Mouth, which is another Malfi book. I think this is my fifth Malfi of the year, because I just...
He's got another one coming. Yeah, literally, I just got a press release. Small Town Horror just came out, and I just saw another press release happen a couple days ago.
Could be one of his older ones getting redone, because he seems to do that. But this one's a few books ago, but it's really good. It's like a bit more Southern Gothic so far, and it's a bit more supernatural. All his others have been a bit more... serial killery. He's definitely been my writer of the year for me, just because I only discovered him this year, and so I've now read more books by him this year than anyone. So it was almost a default, because I was like trying to figure out what to read next and went to it. But I'm halfway through, so I'll wait to report on that.
I am deep in Ill Will, which you had recommended. Yeah, and I'm lobbing back and forth between that one and this YA horror book that Bria had recommended on a couple shows ago called What Stalks Among Us, which is a time loop about two girls in a cornfield. It's really good. For like, it's great
Yeah,
for
the
YA
Chabon
horror.
book isn't easy because it's jumping around,
It's
and it's
long
long,
and tedious.
but it's like there's it's yeah, I think it's one of the best written things this year. So that one is, again, it's some books you need, you know, can't really see it till you're all the way through.
I also forgot to mention, I read Incidents Around the House, the new Josh Malerman
Oh,
one.
cool.
That is creepy as fuck. Like that, there was moments that I was like, oh my, like I will be shocked if that does not get optioned as a film, because it's about a little girl who lives in this house with her parents who are always arguing. And this thing she calls Other Mother comes out of her closet and always asks, can I go into your heart? And then you realize that Other Mother is gaining power and things start happening around the house.
That's creepy.
It was fucking creepy. It was definitely.
Good.
And it's all told from the girl's perspective, from like an 8-year-old's perspective.
No, that's cool. Yeah, because I really liked that one, Daphne, he wrote, which I thought was super creepy too. So it's, yeah, no, good stuff. I'll be curious.
Yeah. Okay, let's take a quick break and hear from our sponsors. Was that everything for
yeah,
you?
Yeah, I'm good.
Excellent. Okay, quick break from our sponsors, and then we're going to be back to talk about back to school. Tonight's episode is brought to you by Random House Books and their new book, The Devil by Name. No one expected the apocalypse would be broadcast by telephone, but in Keith Rosin's The Devil by Name, the follow-up to his smash hit, The Fever House, anyone who managed to survive that doomsday call has a harrowing answer to the question, where were you when the message came through? The Devil by Name is a heart-stopping saga set against the ravaged landscape of a post-apocalyptic America, one in which survivors are united by desire not just to escape death, but to carve out some way to live anew. Stephen King calls The Devil by Name exciting, suspenseful, and horrifying. And Publishers Weekly says that Keith Rosin's new novel is literary horror at its finest. The Devil by Name is available from Random House and can be found wherever books are sold.
Okay, welcome back. It is September, and that means back to school time.
I have been back for 2 weeks now. I'm on my second week. When do you go back? You're on a weird schedule.
Yeah, our schedule changed. It used to be like I would have been back by now, but the school starts their fall semester in mid-October. So,
oh, that's lunacy.
I still have stuff to do, but forget about us. Everyone's going back to school. And we thought we would do a quick back and forth. And some of these you've heard of before. I've picked a couple that I wanted to fit in there that maybe I haven't talked about as much, and a couple classics faves. And we're just going to go, could be high school, could be college, could be any kind of school. And we're just going to do five each. So we are, it's basically our 10. So we're going to count down from 10, I guess. So what is your...
These are our best back to school horrors. And what I found out, which I had mentioned when we did some stuff for our Patreon show a couple of weeks ago, this is actually part of a subgenre that I have never heard get like a proper label called dark academia.
Hmm.
Dark academia films, which are supposed to be films that show that are set in a school and show the darker side of education.
But see, I love that title, and I think that is true of things like Thesis and certain movies. But if it's like Final Exam or whatever, and somebody's stabbing people on campus, I'm not sure if that has anything to do with that. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like there is a difference between a slasher on a school campus and dark academia. Academia strikes me that it has to be something in the institution has something.
Yeah.
And I think those are like British gothic-y, but you're right. That is a subgenre we could do a whole show on and research more movies. But I think there's some of these might have that, and some will be totally.
Yeah. Some of mine are very much grounded in dark academia.
That's
some
cool.
of these we'll, have nothing to do with it.
We'll be random.
But because you already said my first one, I'm just going to kick us off with Thesis.
Oh, geez. Oh, good. Good.
You just dropped that. So I'm just going to start there. Thesis. This is from 1996, and this is, oh gosh, what is his name?
Leandro, I didn't write it down.
Thank you. Yes. It is his very first film, and he goes on to do many a great thing. Yeah. But this is the very first film that he did back in 1996. And this was made by film students. He made this when he was a film student, about film students. And this is one of those like come out of the gate swinging type films when you're looking as far as first films go. And it is about a film student who wants to make up, or I can't, yeah, she is a film student and she wants to make a project about violent films, about people watching violent films. So she goes to one of the professors and asks to have help finding the most violent and pornographic films in the school's library to start there. And while she is watching one, and a lot of these are like archives, she somebody around her dies like very quickly. And then while she starts watching some of the films, she realizes that she is watching a snuff film that was found in the school's like archives. And on it, it shows a student who was killed a couple of years ago being tortured and disemboweled. Like it's really, really brutal. And she realizes that this victim that she is watching in this real snuff film is a university student that that had gone missing 2 years previously. And then she realizes that all she starts getting really into how it's filmed and what's in the background, trying to figure out what this is. And a lot of people are like, it's fake, and she's having problems. So she kind of becomes the detective, figuring out what type of camera is used and the features and where it was shot. It becomes very much like Blow Up with a snuff film, with a film student. Really small, really, self-contained, but this is such a fucking tight film about being a film student. Thesis 1996. This is one that I got on like third generation VHS
Yeah,
tape
me
some
too.
point when I was in college in the 2000s, and somebody was just like, watch this. And it probably helped it being on third generation VHS tape because it did have that feel to it, like you were watching an actual snuff film.
I've really
Such a
wanted
tight
to
movie.
rewatch it now because I haven't seen it for quite a few years, but it's now on
Same.
Apple in HD. So I know you can rent it on
That's
Apple. So I really
wild.
do want to see this in an HD quality. You went classy for your number five. I went so the opposite. My first slasher film in my life that I saw and make it stayed with me because it was the first slasher film I saw. And when I think of high school, I think of Carolyn Monroe at almost 40 years old pretending to be a high school student in and the UK pretending to be America in Slaughter High. Which is like, I think I only have a soft spot for this because I saw this first when as a kid and it stayed with me all these years. But most people find this to be like one of the worst of the worst. But Marty Ranson, who's my favorite nerd in a high school movie, he's the big dork at the school, and you never see more than six students at the school. And they start bullying him, and they basically, Carolyn Monroe, who's always been my like biggest crush anyway, she probably why, probably because I saw this movie too young. She seduces him and takes him to the shower, gets him naked, and then this group of guys all play a mean trick on him. And he starts thinking he wants to get revenge, and he starts doing a science experiment to get revenge on them. Unfortunately, it blows up as acid in his face, and he becomes disfigured and kind of disappears from these people's lives. And then it's a 10-year later reunion movie. So it's kind of a cheat. It starts as a high school film, but then it becomes a reunion film where he wears this crazy jester mask and starts killing them in very creative ways. There's nothing classy. I by the end of the list, I get classy, but there's nothing classy about this movie. But when I think of Back to School, for some reason, I think of this character, and I think this should be the mascot for Back to School movies. It should just be Marty Ranson as this like jester. So if you've never seen this one, take a trip. It is not quality, but it is an interesting and fun relic of 1986. Slaughter High. Number
Okay,
four.
so number that so wait, you did
Five.
so we're on to our number
Yes,
fours. I'm gonna lose track already. So my
There's
number
literally, you have
four.
five fingers, and there's literally five things to remember. So just count one down.
Okay, I'm going to my number four, which I wanted to include one that was middle school or elementary
Oh, nice,
school.
yeah.
So this is I loved this film when it came out, and it really I did time teaching elementary school. I did when I was doing my student teaching as part of my first master's degree. They put me in an elementary school, and I was teaching fourth grade, and it was oh my God, an eye-opening experience. I don't think I would ever teach. God bless the people who do. I don't have the patience for it. But that made me think of Cooties from 2014.
You want to hear something crazy? I still have
What?
never watched this.
Are you serious?
I like,
It's
no,
fine.
everyone said it was good, and I was like in
It's
the
fine.
moment, and then I just never pushed play. I don't know why.
So it opens with this like mutated chicken getting made into chicken nuggets, and then you follow the chicken nuggets as they end up in this school cafeteria and a kid eats them. And so, how the chicken nugget, what's in the chicken nugget? Doesn't really matter. It ends up in the school cafeteria, and slowly the kids all start turning into zombies. It starts with them like childhood illnesses, and our main protagonist is Elijah Wood, who has taken a position as an elementary school teacher but does not want to be there. He basically went off to write a great American novel and failed at it and never wrote anything, and has come back to his hometown to be an elementary school teacher. And so we're following his path mostly, but it's also got Lee Winnell is in it. Rainn Wilson is hilarious in this. And it just follows this group of elementary school teachers as what seems to just be like childhood illnesses escalate into like a zombie plague that is being spread amongst all the kids who had chicken nuggets for lunch. And it is just, it's fun. Like it has
I'm
just
gonna watch
been.
that this year. I'm gonna before October. I'm gonna watch this one because there aren't many left that have fallen through our radar over the last few. That's one that I really should have watched by now.
Yeah, this is Cooties,
All right,
elementary
cooties.
school zombies, and Rainn Wilson, Elijah Wood, and Lee Winnell running from them. It's a trip.
Perfect title too. Watch it with the faculty. That's a good double.
Right?
Really fun. Okay. My next one is one I remember telling you about this one, but I'm not sure if you have seen it yet. Massacre at Central High. Kind of it's kind of arty, kind of drama-ish from that period. So this was from 76, so it's kind of cool because this is before most high school movie tropes from horror movies have started, because really a lot of them started in the 80s, like just so many becoming grain. This is a really good movie, like one of the better movies. And I again, it was impossible to see. It's part of the Danny Perry cult movie book, and that's why people knew about it, but only become available in maybe the last 2 years that you could even
What was this title again?
Massacre at Central High. And so it's
Okay.
not like a slasher movie that sound like the title sounds like one of the dumb slasher films. This is the one where basically a transfer student comes to a school, and at the school he starts noticing in his first week that there's like a real clique of bully dudes who really control the school. And he's just like, what a fucking, this is lame. And he has an old buddy played by Andrew Stevens, who's in the 10 to Midnight movie. And he's like, why do you guys give over to these lame bullies? And he's like, oh, they're cool. And so he starts basically doing pranks and fucking with the bullies, this guy, and like really kind of showing the nerds of the school that you can do this, you can fight back. And then other people start fighting back. And then the guy starts going too far. And when he goes, so it's like, it's looking at that interesting thing, like, oh, on one hand, it's cool to see somebody fight back to bullies. But when he starts going to like extreme violence to do it, and it's not fitting the crime, now the power has tip the other way. And the people in the middle, kind of like the nerd group and stuff, have to, including Robert Carradine, literally Revenge of the Nerds, have to decide like, what do we do? Is this guy out of control? Is he the problem now? And it's very violent. There's some crazy scenes in this, but it's never like a straight slasher. It's a really, really smart, interesting movie that I think is still below the radar of a lot of people. Synapse is the reason it came back. They did a restoration. So look for that if you haven't seen it, because it's not traditional horror for some people, but it is one that I think you won't regret checking out. And that's from 76. So that's Massacre at Central High.
Okay. The next one I'm going to do, we talked about this on Shockwaves when it came out, but I definitely never thought that this got enough love. So I wanted to include one that was more college. And this movie reminds me of one particular element of college that I want to talk about, which is Christie.
Yeah, I like that
Because
film.
the whole thing, this is 2014, it was kind of a direct to Netflix at the time. It was something that we all talked about because it came out right before Thanksgiving. And I remember it being something that like was on everybody's, oh my God, did you see this one yet? Did you see this one yet? And it fell off really quickly to the point that like now my horror students that I have in college 10 years later have never heard of this film. And there isn't much to it, but I found the setup, the premise, and the setting to be so compelling. So we're looking at mindless killers. They're basically going around killing any girls that they consider to be like of a certain type. They call them Christies. And they happen upon a college dorm that is shut down over, I think it's Thanksgiving
It
break.
is
It might be
Thanksgiving. No,
Christmas.
thanks.
Yeah,
Yeah.
Thanksgiving. And there is one girl who is left in the dorm because she couldn't go home. And that is what I remember is that there were times that I did not go home for Thanksgiving because it's only 4 days and it was like a 4 hour trip to my parents' house and back. So if I was only there for a couple of days, a lot of times I would stay and study over Thanksgiving because you always had finals the week that you came back. And being in the dorm when nobody else was there was horrifying. When there was no security, when it was just me and like one other person two floors above me. I remember having those moments and being just like, this is really fucking weird. That said, like being in the shower and no one else is on the hallway, just you by yourself in the shower. It was scary.
I had one holiday that I can remember. I mean, it wasn't alone. There's probably like 20 out of a few hundred people there, but it was totally different. It's funny. Probably maybe just by the privilege of being a dude, it wasn't scary. It was kind of like, oh, this is cool. Cause it's like, but I can imagine how that can feel when you're.
It was weird. Yeah. Especially cause like the dining halls were shut down. So like I was by myself in my room with a bowl of ramen and then going to take showers in the shower room on this hall where I was the only person the entire hall. Like it was just, and the shower room is massive. It was just unnerving. But Christy hit those notes for me. It is about a girl who has decided to stay in the dorm over Thanksgiving holiday. Nobody else is there. And the serial killers break into the dorm with the intent on killing girls that they deem are Christie's, and they deem her as one. What always shocked me about this is the director is this guy named Ollie Lackburn. And he had previously directed this film called Donkey Punch,
I saw that film.
Which I considered to be one of the most tasteless films of 2018, where it is just incredibly tasteless, sexually violent, kind of film.
Can you explain
into, like,
what the title
porn.
Means?
Yeah, no, you can Google that. You just Google that shit. You're fine. Just, I'm sure there's a Wikipedia page that exists and you can just Google that. Okay. But it was by far like one of the most kind of tasteless of the torture porn ilk. Like I loved a lot of the torture porn films. This one was just kind of crossing some weird lines for me. Although I remember some of the guys at Fangoria digging it. It was very much like, but he had directed that. And we didn't hear from him for a while. And then he does Christy, which honestly is kind of a classy slasher. Like it's really refined and subdued and quiet and holding back until it doesn't need to. And then I decided while I was doing this research today to Google what he's doing now. And he is doing a lot of these hoity British Victorian TV shows. Yes. So
from Donkey Punch to
Christy to like all of these kind of British.
Upstairs, downstairs,
type things. And so, okay, good career trajectory. He's doing a lot of TV right now. Okay. So good on you, Ollie Lackburn. I really enjoyed Christy from 2014.
It deserves to be on the yearly rotation for people because it's like really tight. It's just like a fun, exciting watch. There's something really underrated about that one. My number three, I've talked about on here, so I won't spend too much time. It's one I didn't like when I first saw it. And since teaching in film schools for 20 years, Urban Legends Final Cut. I'm bringing it back. More than Urban Legends. I've seen.
So do I.
Like, I just think this movie really gets some of the film school like nuances. It really understands some of the pretensions between young students or the professor who's got tenure. Who's just, if it's not Hitchcock, they're not interested. It's also fun because she's making a film about urban legends, and she's then some of the urban legends that she's chasing down start to be manifest, and people in her crew are being killed, and there's a killer with a. What is it? A fencing mask. And it has a lot to do with cinema and lenses. And it's also clever because it's more of a giallo than a slasher. And that's surprising for the kind of movie it is. It's not perfect by any means, but I've really gained liking of this movie where I really didn't the first time I saw it. But especially all the Hitchcock talk, you can't beat it. It definitely feels the closest to the kind of schools me and you occupy.
Oh, yeah.
Which aren't traditional schools. So, but so I have to put it on the list. Urban Legends, Final Cut. Do it.
Okay, my number two, we are going to go to Detention from 2019. No, not that Detention.
Oh, wait, really?
Detention from 2019. This is a Taiwanese
film. So not the Joseph Kahn crazy bear actually, time travel movie.
No. God damn it, Elric, would you slow down? No, this is, and I don't even know what country this particular movie hails from. I'm going to assume it's Thai. I should have Googled that. I know that the story itself is about, it's set in 1962 Thailand. Huh. And it is about the occupation that they had there, about when they were under martial law from China. And it is called the White Terror. Like I learned a lot about the political movement that was happening here where they were under martial law. And particularly, it was a lot of banning of materials. And it is about a group of students who joined this underground book club. And there's one like counselor who's involved in it, and they meet in the basement to read banned books. And while they're in the basement one day reading banned books, their counselor, the person who's in charge of it, vanishes, and they go on a search to find him. They're meeting in this bomb shelter in the bottom of the school, and then they go on this search to find him and encounter all of these different spirits. And it's very historical. Based on a video game. This is from 2019. I really liked this.
That was my favorite line ever. You just said it's very historical based on a video game in the same sentence.
It's a video game.
Brilliant. It's very historical. It is based on a video game.
Based on a video game. And it is very historical. At least it was giving me information on something I might not be fully informed on, which is the history of Taiwan. So yeah, and I just realized I said Thailand up at the top. It is not Thailand. It's Taiwan. Okay. And so this is, yeah, definitely giving a lot of the history of that, which I clearly was not very informed on. So I really liked this when it came out. I found it to be quite creepy. I had played the video game a lot, and then I thought that the movie did a fairly good job of kind of embodying everything. Okay, now that you have just plugged my number one as well, I'll just hold myself.
Wait, so you did two movies with the same title?
Yeah.
Wow, that's a good gag. I couldn't see that one coming. Okay, well, we'll
blew it though. You blew it.
You kind of blew it by giving.
In the meantime, I want to look up where Detention. What country actually made it? Because it's about Taiwan. I know that it was not even allowed to play in China, but I want to look up.
Before you look it up, let me tell you about the start of this one, because this one's for you to watch, because it is one of the best movies I've seen in the last few years. I had never heard of this movie. It's from
Taiwanese. It is Taiwan. Taiwanese. Thank you.
Taiwan's Taiwan's issue is that China kind of claims it and wants to take it over, and so they're in a very precarious spot. I had a shower in Taiwan once. Long story. I literally was taking a 24-hour flight.
Baby shower, or you just took a shower?
I was taking a 24-hour flight from New Zealand, and it was like this cheap ticket that I thought would be great to try, but it was 24 hours. I've never been on a plane, and it stopped to refuel in China. Taiwan, rather. Apologies. And I was like, how long do I have? And they're like, you have like 8 hours. So I took a bus into the center of the town, went to a Hilton, walked in like I like belonged there. And they had like showers downstairs, literally went in, had a shower, walked back out of the hotel, went to the airport and got on my plane. I swear to God.
They have your picture on the wall as like, don't let this guy back in. He just showers.
It was a great shower. Thank you, Taiwan. One day I will go there for other reasons. Okay.
But watch Detention. 2019, it was 2021 when it was released.
Is there a bear suit in this one or not?
God damn it, I'll get there.
Who would have thought you would do two detentions in a row? I couldn't have predicted this. This is too much. Anyway, this movie is really interesting. So I would never have heard of this movie. From 2010, Japan. Michael Mann did his top 10 for Sight and Sound, and there are all these classic movies, of course. And then there's this movie from 2010. I'm like, what is this movie? It's called Confessions. So I'm like, what is this? I watched it a couple years ago. It is one of the best. For people who like Park Chan-wook revenge films and stuff, this, I guess, is based on a bestseller. It's very controversial. Imagine Japanese middle school. All these kids are on their phones. They're annoying. They're kind of just doing whatever they want. And this teacher, she's just kind of, you know, 40-year-old teacher, kind of very quiet, kind of talking at times, letting them do whatever they want. She seems out of it. She kind of wanders to the front in the first 5 minutes, and she goes, I want to tell you guys something. And they start to half listen. And she's like, I want to tell you that my daughter is dead. And everyone like looks at her like, what? And she just seems real despondent and like out of it. And she's like, my daughter is dead, and I believe somebody in this room killed her. And that's how the movie opens. And then you're like, what? And then it starts cutting up through time, where basically she's no longer, it goes up, it's forward into the time, flashes back at times to what happened. And it's this very complex tale. But what it gets to is it becomes one of the most complex, fucked up revenge movies I've ever seen. Because it's so depressing, because one of these middle schoolers, maybe more, is responsible for the death of her younger, much younger kid. And she is now doing something about it, and she doesn't care. She's by the end of this movie, she's like, there's nothing you can say. I have nothing. I'm just going to do what I want to do now to end your life. It is an amazing movie. Like one of those, like kind of like when you see something like Old Boy for the first time, even though it's not as fun as Old Boy, it's a little more depressing. It is as good as that. It's a truly, truly unique movie. It wasn't really on my radar till recently. So look it up. Confessions. I don't recall how I saw
this. Is hard to find. Yeah, like you have to get the DVD for $30.
I'm trying to think how I saw it. 2 years ago, I saw a good copy of it. It must have, maybe there was somewhere that was streaming it, or maybe somebody found it for me, like I might have asked. But it's 2010, so just, you know, look for it. In Japan, this was a big, big movie. I think it was like one of the films of the year when it came out. So it's controversial. Like, Japan, again, didn't necessarily want this to be their movie that people are thinking of their culture, because it's doing all the things the Japanese movies do so well, which is make their culture look insane.
Being crazy and despondent. Yes. And yeah.
But this one's lesser known, so I wanted to work it into the show because it's so good. So Confessions 2010, look for it.
I'm adding this to my watch list, but yeah, this is going to take some hunting here outside of buying an overpriced DVD and importing it. Because the one that I'm finding is the Thai version.
I'll look to see how I saw it. I can't recall.
Yeah, this is it's a difficult one, so I got to hunt this. Okay, for my number one, Elric already blew it for me, but fine. My number two was Detention. My number one is also Detention. So this is by far, I love this
it's
movie
so, cool.
so much. I've talked about it on prior shows, and I will always talk about this again. This is from 2011, directed by Joseph Kahn. And this is Detention, very, very fast moving, dark comedy slasher that also involves time travel. That was a lot.
So insane,
it is about there's this movie. In this world, there is this movie called Cinderella, and it is a movie slasher. And somebody at the school is copying Cinderella and killing people at the school. So they're copying this movie icon and killing people. And a group of the students band together to fight while they're serving detention. But they also discover this time traveling mechanism within the school and how it had repercussions with things that have already happened. So there's a lot going on. This movie moves fast. This is a fast moving movie to the point that I had to watch it a second time because I loved it so much that I was like, wait, how did that thing work within the time travel? And then you go back and watch it a second time and you're like, oh my God, this is so smart. I love this because this is 2011. This is right around the time that we are still getting a lot of kind of glamorous Paris Hilton-y torture porny type stuff coming out. Everybody looks like, you know, they just walked out of a Limp Bizkit movie. They're very polished and tanned. And we were very much kind of in the Paris Hilton heyday here, still coming off of that. But these characters are real. Like, one of them has a broken foot and she's in overalls the whole time. And it is just, there is something so real about, I mean, we still have that over the top character. She opens the movie, Ubastank. But yeah, she opens the movie. But that said, the rest of the characters that we're encountering in the detention itself feel very fun, real, and not like facsimiles of what we thought high school students were like during this time. I love this movie. It's so fast moving. You're going to want to watch it twice.
I've been wanting
detention
to rewatch it for a while.
From 2011. It's a trip.
This is a Brian favorite on the other show too, and it is one of the coolest. Joseph Kahn's a very unique filmmaker, and
mostly does music videos.
Yeah,
and you feel it.
Yeah, no, it moves. Okay, so objectively, the greatest high school movie of all time is for sure Carrie. I don't think anything could yet come close. The only other one I think is up there, and it was going to be my number one, but I wanted to go for a deep cut, is Battle Royale. I mean, Battle Royale is a banger.
I mean, it is. I would say The Craft is a big one
Craft
for me.
Is good. Yeah, I like The Craft.
Even though it's not about the high school as much, Ginger Snaps, I feel
Ginger
like
Snaps
is
a great.
Huge
yeah,
one
these
for me.
These are yeah. No, those and those are both ones I make more sense for you.
And The Faculty.
Yeah, The Faculty is really solid. But I think Carrie's like unequivocally like the definition of the high school movie. Christine has some good high school stuff in it too, both. But Battle Royale to me is like one of the ones that I find most exciting pre-Hunger Games. So I was gonna make that my number one, but I figured everyone probably listening to this has seen it. If they haven't, really go see it because it's one of the best movies. So I'm picking something almost as crazy from Japan, another discovery from a couple years ago, and it's called Go for Broke from 1985, and it has the best VHS cover ever. It's a woman with a tank top and a big gun and a motorbike helmet, and that's it. And you're just like, what is this movie? And I had to get it on VHS. That's the only way I've seen this movie. It is a real deep
cut. There's a very old film called Go for Broke.
I think there's a few movies called Go for Broke, but this is Japanese from 85.
Some guy in an army helmet also holding a giant gun.
Yes,
so
the term comes from the war. Like, the term going for broke came from World War II, so it makes sense. But in this, it's actually pretty funny because the film's called Go for Broke, and multiple times the Japanese person who says it every time says go for break every time, and you clearly can see the difference. They like clearly didn't get the difference. Anyway, this movie is absolutely baller. I actually bought it on VHS a couple years ago because I was so excited by it. It is this high school where everyone's like really nerdy and all the kids are really kind of innocent and kind of pathetic. And they're going to school. And on the first day of school every year, this bad, evil biker gang rolls up to their school, takes one of them and beats the absolute shit out of them to make an example, steals everyone's lunch money. And it's just like really intimidating and upsetting. And it's like just a touch too violent to be okay with. And there's no teachers or anyone to do anything about it. You almost never see faculty. And so these students are getting around. They're like, what can we do? And someone's like, well, I know this one girl. We could call her. And basically, and this is where you're going to be totally into it, an alternate title is The Seven Madonnas, and that's the name of the gang. And it's basically a riff on Seven Samurai. So these seven biker girls who all have different skills. One's a stunt woman. One is like swords person. One, they're all like crazy talented. They basically come and go, okay, we will come and protect you students next time they come and see what happens. They protect them. They get into a fight with a thing, and then things, this becomes an almost like R-rated exploitation film at time, like with like crazy, there's like really sexual violence and all sorts of crazy stuff as the male gang starts fighting back and trying to pick them off one by one. But ultimately you can stomach some of that violence because this group of women are so fucking kick-ass, and every time they win, it'll cut to the kids in the school and they're mapping it all out on a video game to keep track of who's winning, and they're like, go for break every time, and it is so freaking rad. This if this was on film and it played at a theater, everyone would become their favorite movie. Like, this is the kind of movie that everyone would be converted and like cheering, but because I've never seen it beyond a VHS, I don't know why.
Definitely, the VHS is going to cost you. I will say, I just within the 10 minutes that you were talking about it, found it streaming somewhere.
Yeah, no, if it pops which sometimes.
You may have to do because this is not a bit, like, I can't even find a DVD of this that's legal.
It probably does pop occasionally. These things will pop up on YouTube and stuff. And so if it is and it looks good, watch it because it is taking, and especially you, because it is taking pinky violence, it's taking like the kind of melodrama teen film and then a biker 50s biker culture, and it's smashing the three things together, and it's kind of wild, and it's honestly one of the movies I afterwards was most, I think it was like my number one top pick on Pure Cinema like 2 years ago when I saw it. But it's perfect for this episode because it's all about standing up to your bullies in high school. I always think of just bully movies when I think of high school. So go for a break.
Okay, I just added it to I bookmarked it because I just found it streaming online and it does not seem to exist anywhere else.
Do it for deep cuts.
Yeah, that is definitely a deep cut. Okay, so we are back to school now and totally in. The thing that I always think about is the first day of school, like how scary it is. And that's still like, I still don't sleep the night before my first day of school. And I've been doing this shit forever now.
Well, it's exciting too. Feeling that newness is here. And then it all goes away after a couple weeks.
I'm like, fuck, I have to make another lesson plan. I have to do more PowerPoints. But yeah, for that first day, there's always this kind of like, the thrill. So I just went to my daughter's back to school night tonight. So I'm deep in it on all sides.
Oh, I hate that. I went to one of these and I will bring this up. I hate that feeling because you go in there because we don't teach real things. We teach film. And so it's like, you know,
the fuck?
It's not real.
Don't say that.
It's not real. It's
we just got fired. Good job.
It's awesome, but it's fairy dust. It's like play for the rest of your life. And that's why I like it. But like, I had to go sit in one of those little chairs that they sit in. And like, then I'm in a class for a second where they're talking about math. And I'm literally feeling the same anxiety that I felt like when I was a kid. Like, I don't want to do this. This is everything I don't want in my life.
Teacher, because I just did this for Strummer tonight, had to go do this right before we started the show. And I'm sitting in his tiny little chair, in his third grade chair. And the teacher sent out this questionnaire, like around this sheet of paper questionnaire. And one of the questions on it was, do you feel competent enough in math to help your son with homework, to help your child with homework? And I was like, fuck, he's doing long division now. I think, yeah, I could totally do this. But then it was like, what the fuck are you doing asking me that? I can barely like coordinate how much tip to leave. Like, it was just,
No,
it's that same level of anxiety. English class, I got you. Let's talk about symbolic themes. Math class, no, sorry, you're kind of on your own. After he hits fifth grade, he's on his own.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. And I will say, I only left Hello, Mary Lou to prom night because I thought you were going to pick it. It's such a fun movie. Throwing it back out there. Anyway, there's lots of great high school. We just wanted to pick a few that were on our minds. So
heck yeah. Well, thank you all so much for tuning in tonight. We have a really fun episode coming up in a couple of weeks that I won't talk about yet, but it coincides with a big film that is releasing around that same time, coming out in mid-September. And of course, next week you can find us over on our Patreon show, Deep Cuts, where I've watched some weird stuff. Some of the ones I watched Night of the Juggler.
Oh, cool.
That's all I'll say. Yeah. So that'll be one of mine that I'm kicking off with. But that said, I've also watched a lot of weird shit that I found on YouTube. Some of my international students sent me some links for some, like, you're not going to find this in the States type stuff that I have been loving.
Are we allowed to mention where we're going to be in a couple weeks? Because I don't think we have an episode before that. So I think we should tell people so they can
come. We should definitely. We do have an episode before that, but it will air on the same day that we're doing it. So in 2 weeks, you can find us at Fantastic Fest. We are going to be hosting trivia at the Highball Bar as part of Fantastic Fest. We are going to be hosting a Paramount themed Dead Right horror trivia night. And we have some really fun rounds. Paramount has provided some sweet prizing. Like, I'm just like, oh my God, like, I want to go home with this stuff. So you're going to win some amazing shit from Paramount. So if you happen to find yourself in the Austin area, come on by the bar. I don't even think that you have to have like tickets for the larger festival to get in. I'm not entirely sure on that because we are at a bar.
Well, you just go up to the person at the bar, if there's a bartender, and you say, Mindhunters, and they'll let you in.
Mindhunters.
Because remember how I told you that I said that secret on a Patreon, and two people in the UK came up to me and they just go, Mindhunters. And I was like, yes, yes, it works. This is the secret
password.
You just say Mindhunters and you get in. And I will give a plug. My best friend from New Zealand growing since college, his movie is opening the festival. So that was my first reason for going. And it plays, I think, at three theaters in a row at the same time. I think that's how they work it there. So on Thursday night, I think it's the opening night movie. So it's the Rules of Jenny Penn. It's John Lithgow versus Jeffrey Rush in an old person home. And it is amazing. And so
I am so sad I am missing that. I couldn't roll in on Thursday because I have class. Yeah. And I was like, I can't miss class for this.
I'm sure this will get a proper release because with those stars. Yeah. On it. But John Lithgow is in Raising Cain form. Is what I will say. And so it's good fun.
Is he in like Naked in a Bathtub Dexter form?
I like that. Absolutely, both things you will get in this movie. Funny you should ask. And I probably am not allowed to say more than that, but either way. But no, it's really cool. And look out for that. There's a ton of good movies playing, obviously, but that's the only one that I have to see. So, but yeah, we'll be there at the trivia and that's going to be fun. So.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. The entire Fangoria gang will be there with us so you can come find us. And yeah, a lot of really great events and I'm just excited to see movies and hang out. So yay, Fantastic Fest. So thank you all so much for listening. Hopefully we'll see you at Fantastic Fest or over on our Patreon show. If not, we'll be back in 2 weeks with a lot more fun. The Colors of the Dark podcast is a Fangoria production. Producers and co-hosts are Rebecca McKendry and Elric Kane. Executive producers are Tara Ainsley and Abby Gould. Sonic branding by Michael Rodriguez. And, of course, our amazing sound engineer, Ernie Hurtado.